It was the scandal of Europe in the mid-1500s. Martin Luther, the monk, married Catherine, a runaway nun. Like any marriage, the Luthers faced some difficulties. Here's Dr. Erwin Lutzer.
The real thing that held it together during the rough spots, and it's clear that there were rough spots, is respect. They continued to respect each other, and they gave one another space.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Swalgamuth, author of A Place of Quiet Rest, for October 27, 2017.
Continuing our conversation today with Dr. Erwin Lutzer about the Protestant Reformation. We're celebrating, observing a 500-year anniversary of that Reformation. It was an earthquake. It rearranged the map of Europe. So much of what we know and experience today around the world in Christendom has to do with ways that that era got back to Christ, back to the gospel, and the spiritual rebirth that God brought about there in the 16th century. And we've talked over these last days about the life of Martin Luther, the life and times, and his courage, his faith, his humility, his fears, and how he got us back to the authority of God's word and the beauty of Christ as our Redeemer. Now, the Reformation and Luther's part in it affected everything that you can imagine, including marriage and family, very practical issues. So today, with Dr. Lutzer helping us here, we want to talk about Martin Luther's marriage, his children, his home, what it was like, and how that was all impacted by the gospel, and how that family and the way that Martin Luther came to think about family impacts how we think about family today. The gospel affects everything, right? And certainly in the area of marriage, I'm experiencing this as a newlywed. We need the gospel in our home. You need it in your home. And Dr. Lutzer, talk to us about before Luther got married. What was the situation about marriage and family and the priesthood? Just give us a backdrop there, if you would.
Just so that your listeners know, we are talking about a marriage that probably impacted the world greater, in greater ways than any other marriage. Now, today, when there's a marriage, especially of royalty or whatever, it's broadcast around the world and billions see it. But it doesn't necessarily change the way in which marriage is viewed. And that's why a historian actually said, and it's a historian that I respect, Luther's impact in his family and marriage was almost as great an impact as his ecclesiastical reformation. Because from now on, marriage was going to be seen differently. And even some of our customs today still date back to the time of Luther. And before we get into the interesting romance of it all, and romance, it took a while for that to develop, as we shall see, let me answer a question that we raised in a previous broadcast but didn't answer. And the question was, why wasn't Luther put to death? You remember it was the intention of the emperor to kill Luther, and Luther then was hidden in the Wartburg Castle. There could have been times when Charles could have killed Luther, but the Turks were circling Vienna. This was the time of the rise of the Ottoman Empire. And Charles needed the help of the Lutherans in his war against the Turks. So you see, he couldn't move against Luther. He was so angry that after Luther died, he actually began a war with the Protestants when he had more freedom to do that. And so Luther never was put to death, but died a natural death.
And again, you see God's providential hand in history.
We see God's providential hand, and let's give the background. Luther was living at a time when marriage was in disarray. Now, we might find that difficult to believe, but the church wanted to have marriage under its jurisdiction, but people often avoided the church because you had to pay money to, have the ceremony and so forth. And really, there was no standard policy. For example, children sometimes ran off and got married. And Luther spoke against that, along with a couple of other things that we will mention. And yet marriage was considered to be a sacrament, a means of grace. Now, it wasn't a necessary sacrament because obviously the priests weren't married and they didn't need that sacrament. But I think it was an attempt of the church to kind of elevate marriage and to say that it is one of the seven sacraments. And yet, you have this tremendous disparity, you have disarray. Luther begins to write, and he speaks against celibacy. He has some powerful arguments as to why the priesthood should not be a celibate priesthood. He himself is still a monk. Let's remember, let's put this in context. His marriage takes place 4 years after the Diet of Worms, or the Diet of Worms, as it is said in German. So Luther is famous. He's known throughout all of Germany. When he went to Worms, the whole city basically was there to welcome him. So he's going to get married as a famous man to a runaway nun. But let's keep that story for just a moment. So Luther begins to speak against celibacy. He says it is unnatural. He said to put priests next to women and the priest is celibate, he says, is something like putting straw on fire and expecting it not to burn. He began to preach about the elevation of marriage, going back to the book of Genesis, that this was ordained of God, and that marriage was natural, and that celibacy should be abandoned. Well, what happens to that? It floods Germany, and it gets into a convent. And in this convent, there are nuns who are hearing about Luther. They're reading about him. And he's arguing against celibacy, against nunnery. And 12 of them decide, what shall we do? So they consult with Luther, obviously not directly, but through emissaries. And Luther says, I think you should escape, and I will arrange the escape. So what happens is there's a man by the name of Leonard Knopp. Leonard Knopp was the guy who would bring herring and other goods to the nunnery. And so on the night before Easter Sunday, he came with his wagon with plenty of blankets, and 12 nuns escaped. You know, the question is, and that was a capital offense for you to take a nun and to have her escape. And Luther was willing to take the risk because his elector was Prince Frederick, and Frederick was actually on Luther's side in many regards. He had a very interesting role to play in all this. So anyway, 12 nuns come to Wittenberg, and the question is, how do we find husbands for them? We have to do something with them. 3 went home, so you have 9 left. Luther worked to get husbands for all of them, and there was one left by the name of Katharina, Katie, as we call her. And he said, you should marry a Dr. Glatz. And she said, no. She said, under no condition will I marry him. And Luther was miffed. I mean, he was trying to do her a favor to get her married off, and she refused to marry this guy. And she had the audacity to say, I'm going to marry either Amsdorf or Luther. She, I'm sure, was joking because Luther was 16 years older than she. Luther was very famous, and he was, I suppose, Europe's most famous bachelor. And furthermore, at this time, even though he was writing against celibacy, he was still keeping his vow. And so she ends up without someone to marry her. And Luther decides that he's going to. Now, it's very interesting when you look at it, because I have some quotations here. By the way, regarding celibacy, the statement that was popular in those days was, marriages fill the earth, but virginity fills the heavens. In other words, celibacy was seen as preferred.
Now, I read that before, can I interrupt you here?
Yes, please.
That he initially didn't want to marry because he thought he was going to die.
Right.
And he didn't want to leave her as a widow.
That's right.
So he was thinking about not leaving her
exactly
in a bad condition. But then he decides he's
well,
free to marry.
Well, let me quote his words, though. I didn't love my Katie at the time, for I regarded her with mistrust as someone proud and arrogant. But it pleased God, who wanted me to take pity on her. And then he goes on to say that the real reason wasn't love, but he really married out of obedience to Christ. For Katie, the marriage was an issue of survival. Now, Isn't that interesting? You know, you like to talk about providence, Nancy, but this is also an example. Katie, because she wasn't married off, spent 2 years in the home of the Cranachs in Wittenberg. The Cranachs are the painters. All the paintings that you see of Luther were painted by the Cranachs, both father and son. So there she was taught how to manage a household, how to make food, and all these other things that she does in a spectacular
amazing,
way. She ends up being an amazing wife for him. So anyway, he decides then to get married. He says, first of all, to please his father. Now, his father was against him going into the monastery, so he visited his father, and he thought maybe this might be a way to keep my father happy. Why did he do it? First of all, he says, to please his father. The second reason is to spite the devil. And the third reason was to make angels rejoice. So he gets married, all right? But I want us to think today about the opposition that occurred to him and what he had to put up with. There was not a lot of possibility that this marriage would succeed. First of all, 16 years different. He is a famous man. She, of course, nobody heard of except that she was a runaway nun. And by the way, her father, when he dumped her off into the nunnery, and she was there actually at a school at the age of 6, I don't think they ever met again because he was on a different trajectory. She comes and she becomes his wife, and there is huge opposition. Melanchthon, who was Luther's sidekick, and he was buried with him in the castle church in Wittenberg, was so opposed to the wedding that Luther never even invited him to the wedding. And he found it very difficult to come around on that point. But the other thing, Nancy, and isn't this sad, the brunt of all the criticism was against Katie. She was called the seductress. She said that you're the one that you knew how weak this man was and you seduced him into marriage. And she was blamed for the fact that they got married. And that criticism of Katie even continued after Luther's death. And so Luther and Katie get married. They are in a wedding, first of all, a private wedding, and then they go to the church where Buchenhagen ultimately marries them. He was the pastor at the time. And yes, she is 26 and he is 42, 16 years different. And the opposition continues. This is humorous. Even King Henry VIII of England. Now, we're going to have to talk about him in the Reformation because he's a contemporary with Luther and some of the things that he did and how it impacted the Reformation. But even he accused Luther of disgraceful lust in violating a nun who was consecrated to God. Now, King Henry, you know, he's the one who beheaded his wives whom he didn't like, but Luther, you are filled with disgraceful lust, all right? Okay. So this marriage begins. Now, Katie, she becomes a spectacular woman in terms of all that she did for Luther in the 23 years they were married together. For example, gardening. She had to garden because you must understand that if you see the cloister, the black cloister where they lived, it's in an area, it's a big building. It had about 40 rooms, and those rooms were always full, not necessarily of students, but politicians came, and lots of students came, yes, and important dignitaries came to see Luther, and they all stayed there, and they all stayed there for free. He begins to call Katie the morning star of Wittenberg because she gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And she doesn't really complete her day's work until 9 o'clock. Now, in the middle of this, she does have 6 children, we should say. So she was spectacular in her ability to garden. She was a nurse. Luther was confounded by all kinds of illnesses, and she had all kinds of remedies. By the way, I read that historians do not know where she learned all that. She wouldn't have learned that necessarily in the nunnery. Maybe it was when she was with the Cranachs, because she was able to nurse him, and people marveled at the fact that Luther's health improved after marriage. And that, I'm sure, was because of Katie, and they developed a very strong love between each other. But really, Nancy, the real thing that held it together during the rough spots, and it's clear that there were rough spots, is respect. They continued to respect each other, and they gave one another their, they gave one another space. Katie was way out ahead of other women of the era and what they would have been allowed to do. She managed the finances.
Which they, I understand, Luther was not all that good at himself.
Not at all. He gave everything away. He gave their wedding presents away. And when they were down to nothing, Katie took over. And Luther said, God has given us a hand with five fingers, and the reason that God divided our hands is so that the money could flow through. So he gave it to anyone who had a need. And as a businesswoman, she makes two important decisions. One is she buys that farm, you know, in Zulsdorf, 2 days away, and she begins to, she has 8 pigs there, she has a number of different animals that she takes care of, and sometimes she stays away up to 3 weeks, and Luther is miffed. And that's where that famous letter he writes to her and says, my dear Lord, Sir, Dr. Katie. By the way, he always signed his letters to her, your obedient servant. People spoke about her greed, but he never spoke of her greed, but always praised her thriftiness. And he defended her through all of these criticisms. But she buys this land because now she has some freedom. And he writes a letter, and I guess I have to do it by memory, where he says, to the woman of Zulsdorf, and he gives her various different names like Sir, my Lord, etc., etc., who resides in body in Wittenberg, but in spirit in Zulsdorf. Because whenever she came back, she was worried about the farm. See, that was one change. The other change was not popular at all. She began to charge for coming and living there in the cloister, rather than people just simply coming and freeloading. And she said, you have to pay something. Well, you know, that did not go over well, but she was a businesswoman, and she held to her ground. Now, in the midst of this, Luther began to appreciate his wife's intellect, her savvy business finesse, and sometimes he called her by various names. You remember he called her my Book of Galatians because that was his favorite book. He also called her my rib. He sent greetings to a friend. I and my rib send greetings to you. I send greetings to you and to your rib and all the little ribs. Now, at the beginning, he said, I feel neither passionate love nor burning for my spouse, but I cherish her. And that's where their love began. And this is really proof that love can grow, because there's no doubt. And if I could say this about Katie, she apparently had a temper. He said, if I can bear the wrath of the devil, of sin, and of conscience, then I can also stand Katie von Bora's anger. So,
but you know what? He needed her too. Tell a story about when she dressed in black as if she were going to a funeral.
Exactly, when he was depressed.
Because he was prone to depression and self-pity.
And she saw him depressed, and she dressed in black. And he said, why did you dress that way? She said, I'm going to a funeral. He said, who died? She said, well, didn't you hear? God died. God died. Yeah, that's why you're so despondent, is God died. Luther began to laugh and think to himself, you know, it is kind of crazy that I would be despondent if God is still living. Oh, she was of tremendous help to him. Now, you can tell that Katie was assertive by the fact that when you read the table talks, what you will see is that she would often interrupt and give her little speeches too. And she'd enter into the discussion with all these people, you know, sitting around. And she would ask questions like, why did God expect Abraham to sacrifice his son? How can we simultaneously be saints and sinners? She entered into these discussions. And when Martin got out of line and said some things that maybe he shouldn't, she let him know that in a nice, gentle way, I'm sure. Listen, within a year, Luther said, "To my kind, dear Lord Catherine Luther, a doctor and a preacher in Wittenberg, grace and peace in Christ, dear Sir Katie." So he considered her a spiritual companion. How do we know he really respected her? Well, first of all, she was the one who persuaded him to write the book, The Bondage of the Will. Erasmus had written a book entitled The Freedom of the Will. She said, "You have to reply." And that turned out to be, in Luther's mind, his best book. He, in several letters, relied on Katie to convey very critical pieces of information and news to people. And finally, I read one of his letters where he trusted her to oversee a ministerial search committee to fill a pastoral position in a nearby city. So you can see here that he appreciated her discernment, her wit. He says, "I wouldn't give up Katie for France or Venice. First, because God gave her to me. And second, because I've often observed that other women have more shortcomings than Katie." Although he says she too has some shortcomings, but they are outweighed by the many great virtues that she has, and she keeps faith in marriage, that is, fidelity and respect. So he called her his sweetheart, Katie, to my beloved Katie, and so you have these terms of endearment between the two of them. And in family time, they would get together and they had family devotions. I know that I've been speaking a lot here, but I want to talk about the kids. Luther went through a lot of sorrow. Mm-hmm. He had a baby that died, and then little Magdalena. Magdalena was his most precious child. He called her Ländchen. Ländchen in German is a term of endearment. She died, and he was so sorrowful.
Age 14, right?
Age 14. He just cannot understand how God can take this one from him. And he says, "Why do I hurt so much when you are so fortunate as to be with God?" On her tombstone, he inscribes these words: "Here do I, Lena, Luther's daughter, rest, sleep in my little bed with all the blessed. In sin and trespass I was born, forever I would be forlorn. But yet I live and all is good. Thou, Christ, dost save me with thy blood." And so that's Luther and his family. Remarkable. And what this did, Nancy, is it changed the whole view of marriage. That's why Protestants, of course, as you know, they are not required to be celibate. And the relationship of Katie and Luther, even their intimacy, there were things about it that were known, that really opened up the whole business of marriage and made it acceptable, gave it a great deal of, what shall we say, affirmation, and standardized the procedure. So that after Luther, you went into a church, you said your vows at the altar. All of those changes were made as a result of his marriage.
Yes, some people thought that when he got married that his influence would be diminished, but in fact it really increased because of what God did in and through that marriage.
You know what I think as I'm thinking and responding to what you've said? Yes, of course, that was another one of the criticisms, is that here's a marriage that was begun in somewhat of a strange way.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Luther wanted to actually have her married off to someone else initially, and then he decided to marry her and falls in love with her, and they have this wonderful relationship that he needed. And that really shows you that God takes circumstances and he uses them for his good. Mm-hmm. And even when...
And for our good.
For our good, mm-hmm. for our good and for his good. And even when our relationships aren't maybe what they should be at times, that God oversees that and blesses it. Now, very quickly, Luther dies. Okay, he is in a city. He's preaching there to resolve a dispute. And he dies in Eisleben. Three of his sons are there. Katie's not with him. She hears the news. She's just totally brokenhearted. She lives 6 years later. And Charles V, whom we heard about previously, who was the Holy Roman Emperor, was determined to finally put a kibosh on all of the Lutherans and to return Europe back to Catholicism. But he had run out of options. He now had some freedom. So he gets an army from Spain that overruns Germany and fights the Germans with war. And he himself comes to Wittenberg, but Luther's already dead. But in the midst of this, Katie has to leave Wittenberg. She goes with the children, puts things in a wagon. She comes back, and then she leaves again because of trouble in Wittenberg. When she's finally there, she'd like to rebuild, but she has to leave again. And she's in a wagon now with her two youngest children, who are now adults. And the wagon lurches, and she's on her way to Torgau. And she hops off the wagon to steady it, fearing that it was going to tip. And she ends up in the ditch, in water, in the cold. And she's taken from there. And then she is brought to Torgau. And she's basically nursed for 3 months and then dies. But her last words, I will cleave to Christ like a burr cleaves to a fur coat. Isn't that beautiful?
Wow. Yeah.
What a way to go. I haven't even told you about all the problems she had about Luther's will, but very interesting life. But like Luther and Katie said at the end, look at the lives we lived. Look at the lives we lived. Who could have seen that in the stars, that these two people, one a monk and one a runaway nun, would go down in history as some of the most famous people who ever lived with the greatest impact. Unbelievable.
And maybe to wrap it up, this paragraph from your book where you, in a chapter on the Luther family, you said, for more than 1,000 years, celibacy was upheld as an ideal. And Augustine had argued that sex, even in marriage, involved sin. Martin and Katie taught future generations that marriage involves mutual love, joyful sex, and genuine companionship, and the approval of God. And how huge and wonderful a change is that if you think of marriage as a picture of the redemption story, of the love of Christ for his bride. So even in this, what might be considered a very non-spiritual part of their lives, it was hugely spiritual, because even in this marriage and family, they were telling the gospel, which is what God calls us to do. You think about what disarray marriage and family are in our day, and how could God use our marriages to tell the gospel story, to show the infinite, unchanging, faithful love, covenant-keeping love of Christ for his bride. And so in that everyday stuff of life and marriage and family, this is an opportunity for us to reflect to the world the gospel of Christ.
That's Nancy DeMoss Wagelmuth showing us how even our imperfect marriages can point people to Jesus. If he could use Martin and Katie Luther, he can use us despite our struggles and weaknesses. If you've enjoyed the rich and practical history lesson from our guest Erwin Lutzer today, I hope you'll jump into the subject even more. He's written a book called Rescuing the Gospel: The Story and Significance of the Reformation. We'd like to send you a copy when you help keep the ministry of Revive Our Hearts going. Donate any amount at reviveourhearts.com, and you can request this book as a gift. You can also call 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. And we'll send one copy during this series for your gift of any amount. On Monday, we'll hear about some of the other figures in the Reformation: Calvin, Zwingli, the Anabaptists. They all had flaws, but were used by God to keep his word and the gospel in the forefront. Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Wagelmuth is calling women to greater freedom, fullness, and fruitfulness in Christ. It's an outreach of Life Action Ministries.